Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Simon Phipps joins me. Yes, he's back. We're going to be talking about Zalando and what they're doing to contribute to and open up their own internal open source projects. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps, episode 412, recorded November 22nd, 2016, Zalando. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneAge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, the projects you may not have heard of at all but want to find out about right after this show, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it. As usual, I am joined by a lovely and talented co-host. This week, no exception, welcome way back, Simon Phipps.
Hey, hi, Randall, and congratulations on your 55th birthday. Another milestone to record a show on your birthday.
Yes, actually, this is the very first show. I just wanted to say, I actually had to do the research, and this is the very first show that I have done that is on my birthday, which is pretty awesome. And yes, I'm 55 today, and so I'm pretty happy with that. And I am speaking to you from my brother's place again, just like last week, where I'm up in Lacey, Washington, which is just north of Olympia, just south of Seattle, for those of you that are geographically challenged. And having a great time here. Since it's my birthday, we are going out with family, my brother, his wife, their son, I think, is coming along, and my mom. She lives nearby. And we're going to... take me out to birthday dinner and then also see a movie, see the new Harry Potter thingy.
Oh, not Harry fantastic Potter, animals. Harry Potter.
Yes, right. And so we'll be seeing that today in IMAX 3D, which should be pretty cool. So that's on my agenda for today. And I, before going too much further, I probably should say this for the end, but I just want to remember briefly that this would have also been my brother Russ's 54th birthday, but... He passed away back in January, and we did a tribute to him on the show there. But this is my first birthday without him, so it's a little rough. And Simon, where are you speaking to us from?
I am in my delightful office in Southampton in the UK, down on the south coast, where the outside it's very dark, and it's been raining all day, vast quantities of rain, and it feels very wintry over here.
Cool. Well, I mean, it's also very wintry here. It rained off and on. It's raining right now. I think this morning it's working really much like that. We have a show today to do. It's not just about us chatting, although I love to chat to you. I love to chat with you. That is a symmetrical thing, not an asymmetrical thing. Chat at me. Right. Exactly. There we go. So today we have Zalando on board, and as we were discussing before the show, I think this is the first time we've had like a fashion platform on the show. They're on because they have been open sourcing a bunch of components. I kept going down the list and going, there's 30, there's 40. So a number of components of their platform that they use. And open source is cool, but we really want to talk specifically, and you're a perfect person to be with me on this show today, to talk about why open source, and is it just open source in name, or are they actually getting contributions? We have lots of questions about that to be able to ask them. Zalando apparently is Europe's largest online fashion platform. And so we've got a couple of guests on today to talk about this. We have, I'm going to mispronounce this, I'm sure. Well, the first one, probably not. Lori Apple. That one's pretty straightforward to announce. And then also Raffaele De Fazio are both going to be joining us soon. They're both in Europe, Berlin, I believe. Germany. Both in Germany, not just Berlin, right? Berlin, the city, east and west, both together again, like always. So, what have you seen so far in looking over the materials, Simon?
Well, you know, they're one of a number of online fashion retailers that we have in Europe. Europe has got each country has got its own giant. Zalando is based in Germany. There's all sorts of other brands around in Europe. They, from reading through all the briefings here, they have an infinite quantity of software componentry that seems, to my eyes, to be completely random. But I'm guessing that if you put it all together in a pile, it builds some sort of a web stack that you can sell clothes and fashion accessories through. So I'm going to be interested to find out if there's a theme and if they have a plan. I think that's really my emphasis here.
Yeah, and that's one thing I also will want to get into. I don't want to give away the whole show because otherwise we'd be doing it all in the preliminary without having any answers, which would be kind of silly. But it's like it does look – I agree with you. It does look a little scattered. So we want to figure out what their strategy is here and whether there's a actually something that can be built with all of them that isn't – this isn't just things that people would patch or add to their own projects. Although that's pretty likely actually. I'm sort of guessing it's going to be like that. But – instead of us, chatting forever about that, let's actually bring on some people who can answer some questions. So, Lori Apple, welcome to the show.
Hi, how's it going?
Hey, and let's see, Berlin somewhere, right? That's where you're speaking to us from?
Yes, Berlin,
okay, great.
Kind of by Checkpoint Charlie.
Awesome. I don't think I've ever actually visited there. You know, cruise ships don't go all the way up into Berlin, so... it's kind of a limiting factor for me visiting 58 countries so far, but mostly just the edges of countries. So haven't been all the way up into Berlin. And let's also bring on our other guest for today, Raffaele DiFazio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, everybody.
Great. And you're also in Berlin, yes?
Yes, exactly. On the other side of the wall.
The other side of the former wall, right. Did either of you get a piece of it when it was breaking down?
No, because I was in the U.S. I'm from Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So I was about 13. Yeah.
Back in the days, yes. All right. So let's start
now
with you, Laura.
Not everybody knows how old I am, so.
Oh, well, yeah, do the math, right? Well, I'm 55 today, so everybody knows how old I am, too. So there we go.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Except I'm very publicly announced that I'm 55 today. Okay, I'm getting distracted by my own age. Lori, why don't you give us the overview of this? Talk a little bit about Zalando in general. Talk about your use of open source. And then talk about what and why it is you're open sourcing parts of your platform.
Okay, so in case somebody's just tuning in now, Zalando is actually the largest fashion platform in Europe. To give you a little spiel, the business spiel, we have revenue over 3 billion euros per year and about more than 11,000 employees in Europe, 1,600 in tech. So that's comparing to 2004, which was the tech team was at that time about 600 people. So you can tell we've grown pretty rapidly since then. That was when we went public. So we're a publicly traded company. About 5,000 employees in Berlin, and about 19 million active customers. So, with such a big tech team, you know, we have. So I go back to last spring when, right after the company went public, we realized that the old way that we were developing, which was quite command and control, very monolithic, wasn't going to be able to sustain the kind of ambitious growth that we had in mind, and so we changed our tech management strategy to a more agile format. So we call this radical agility. And it takes from Daniel Pink's Drive, the concepts of autonomy, mastery, and purpose, and gives that to developers to be able to innovate, experiment, use whatever technologies they really believe will help them get the job done. And one of the results of this change was that our open source development exploded really. And by the end of last year, we had gone up from just a few repos on GitHub to more than 300. So this year we scaled back by taking a closer look at those repos and assessing them for their value, their innovation, their usefulness to us and to others. And now we're at a nice, healthy 138, I think, as of today. So that's, in a nutshell, our journey, the TLDR version.
Sure. And so this is the So you were using open source internally, but the conversation mm-hmm. shifted to that maybe we can get some value and maybe we can give back some value from open source. Was that something you were instrumental in, or are you just a participant in that?
So I showed up here in February 2015. Back in 2012, so the tech stack had originally been Magento, which is an open source e-commerce technology. So there's always been this nod to open source. It became more conscientious intentional around 2010 when we shifted from Magento to a Java JVM-based architecture, and we incorporated Postgres, which is open source for our database technologies, as well as Tomcat and Spring. And so that's when we started to embrace using open source technology in a more expansive way. We had a more diverse stack after that. So there were some developers who started creating projects, especially around Postgres use. Also in Python, some of our internal tooling, there was one developer in particular who was very passionate about open source and started open sourcing Python tools on our public repo. When we announced Radical Agility, we greatly expanded our use of different tools and technologies and became much more diverse. So that opened up many more opportunities for us to not only use, but give back to the technologies that we were taking advantage of to build our business.
Well, I definitely want to ask some more questions about this, but I also want to bring Raffaele on just to make sure you're both introduced early in the show. So Raffaele, what's your relationship to what we're talking about today?
Yeah, I joined a little bit later than Lori in June 2015. And so at that point of time, the whole open source, the real open source time at Zalando was really growing. So it was there was constantly chatting about contributing to open source and do things open source first. So with a very open mind regarding making the project reusable and useful to other people, and it was essentially a natural way to start working, and I joined the what we call the Open Source Guild, which is our internal way of saying like interest groups around open source in this case, and yeah, I started contributing more and more to open source. To our project and also to external projects, and then this just became the rational way of working. So really having a look at communities and I would say radically changing the way we approach software development in general.
Oh, so I also noticed in particular you're about container technologies. I have a couple of clients that are both looking at that very strongly. I'm sure there's some specific questions I can ask you later, but what's your overall take on containers? Or is that like the next platform as a service sort of that was all radical like 4 or 5 years ago? Now it's all containers. What can you tell me about that now that you're sort of in the trenches about that?
So we have been into containers since a long time. So Zalando has been into containers since a long time, in the sense that we've been using LXC containers before Docker was cool, and we have been using Docker in production since quite some time already. What I've been working on is essentially also introducing some more abstraction to it, like for example Kubernetes, and I previously worked also on Mesos, which are container orchestration technologies, and I think these are really good cases for open source. Especially the Kubernetes project is a great example of how a project can go really, really fast thanks to its community. We see already every day on the web like why Kubernetes is growing so fast. And it's not really because of the companies behind it, but also especially because of the incredible impact of the community.
So it'd be a good time for Raffaele to give a hint about some of our work, like Petroni and and Kubernetes on AWS, which he's actually worked on. Maybe he wants to say a few words.
Yeah, this
not
is
to
really,
prompt him or
really,
anything.
Yeah, this is really good.
I used to be a journalist too, so I tend to hijack interviews. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So we have this Patroni, which is as we say, a template for Postgres to have an eye available Postgres setup with automatic failover and all these nice things, which can now recently also work on Kubernetes, and. Yeah, this is we could even so we also integrated Helm chart. Helm is a tool for Kubernetes to easily deploy applications. And the great things is like I was for example 2 weeks ago at KubeCon or ContainerCon also in Seattle, and there was a talk about Patroni. So people are really excited about it. And it's really great. So we made a lot of work. It's getting very popular in GitHub and the open source communities. And we see a growing usage of it. And I think it's a really great thing for us.
Okay. So question for you. In the introduction there, I was saying I didn't really see a pattern to the GitHub repo that you've got there. I'm just looking at it here on my other screen, and apparently there are 137 repositories on your GitHub base.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a theme to all that? You know, is there any scope for a community around Zalando code, or is that all componentry that you've used in otherwise unreleased internal tools?
Sure. So each project is different. We're quite a big operation with so many customers. We have data that we're collecting constantly from 15 different markets. And so how this data is handled, country by country can be different. We also have all the products that we have. So we're collecting data constantly, and there's all sorts of operations just around data collection, data science, data processing. You know, what do we do with it? There's also we have at least 6 different languages, as far as I know, on our tech radar that we actively promote. So we have projects for each of those language communities. And our teams are autonomous, so they're developing in these different languages. And often, within departments, you will have collections, families of related services in certain languages, and some of those are the projects that we release publicly because they're general enough that others can use them. We have projects around API, using APIs and RESTful APIs. We're big fans of the Swagger specification, now the Open API specification. So we have 2 or 3 projects based on that in different languages, Python, Clojure, and Scala. We have, we're very diverse. We have an intentionally polyglot stack, and so our open source portfolio reflects that diversity. Right. And each project, we have libraries, we have, API frameworks. There's a variety, and that's just the outgrowth of the variety of the different processes and systems that we have.
So if you were going to dive into Zalando's open source code, where would you start? Because I had quite a good look, and I couldn't work out the answer to that question.
Well, I think it would start with what language do you love most? So then you might use the search function on our dashboard, which is at the bottom under our names, to find projects in those languages that maybe you'd like to work on or use on your own team. Or maybe you are pursuing a specific technical concept like RESTful APIs or building a tech radar or microservices. So we have templates for building microservices in different languages, and maybe you would go look for the projects there that would speak to the idea that you're actively working on. It really depends on what your needs are.
Right. So there's no kind of overall guiding concept here. This is you from digging around, you're very keen on agile methodologies and Scrum. This is all the external view of your internal work, and you don't really have a community view. There isn't a Zalando community so much supporting you. It's all individual communities around individual pieces of code.
For now, yes, because if you think, like, I think it takes a while to get your name out there as an open source company. So we weren't always as public in what we were doing on the tech side of the business. It was just wasn't something, you know, we're growing rapidly, and it just wasn't something that we were doing as much as we do today, where we have lots of developers going out to speak at conferences, writing blog posts, a very active tech blog. We have all of these tools that we use to communicate what we're doing behind the scenes to the public. So building our name as an open source contributor as a company is still very much a work in progress. But to start that kind of work, developing projects for specific communities to use helps you let those communities know that you're a part of their communities, and then they start talking about you. And then over time, your brand, if you will, can it becomes stronger. And then it's not a question anymore. People just automatically associate your company as an open source contributor and a supporter of the community.
So would you be able to pick out, you know, one case that has got a good story around it? You know, that you've, it's a large piece of code. You've got a good community of co-contributors, a lot of contributions coming in from outside, a lot of unexpected uses by other parties that are going to give the code a life of its own. Do you have a case study or a story that you'd like to tell?
Sure. So I think Rafaela might want to chime in here again with Petroni, which has got a community around it.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely... I can definitely talk about Petroni. I think it's so. I would also say that so it was a little bit. So I didn't work exactly on Petroni. I supported the work done from our database team, and I was one of the guy was very surprised by the level of work that was done there. And essentially the adoption. So you should imagine this. So the first time, so when I was initially having a look at Kubernetes in general, so I was looking at some slides and I guess a presentation from a conference last year, and I saw that someone was presenting about Petroni, and this was like, oh, this is our stuff. It's not us there. What is going on? And this was like, we had an initial chat internally, and we immediately realized it was having like a lot of tractions on the web, and from there on, we just kept extending it. So it was basically born for run on AWS. And then was we included the support for Google Compute Engine, and now we made Kubernetes also a first class integration. So we really want to make sure that this project has already a very good community, and we'll keep supporting it. It's been, as I said, we worked already with people from Red Hat together, and which are our also external contributors to the project. And we work together with, as I said, with people at Dice for integrating the Helm chart to make it very, very easy to run it. And yeah, we keep working on it.
Right. So I'm looking at that project. I see you have quite a number of pull requests you've accepted from the community there, 223 that you've closed. How do you prioritize for yourselves the pull requests that are coming in from the community? Because you know you're internally a very tight team that's using a methodology that drives you to work closely and in a very rapid way with each other. And getting pull requests is a bit of a burden for people who have got a tight internal agile team. So do you encourage pull requests, or do they tend to sit there waiting for you to get round to them over the weekend?
So we definitely encourage pull requests, and this tool is really not, let's say, a minor project for us. It's something we're really betting on, and we're using internally. So getting a pull request is just like, you know, in the end is getting a new feature inside for us. And of course, there's work that you have to put into trying to see to get the right quality in a pull request and reviewing them. But I guess it's also very exciting for the team to just see contributions and new ideas and extending it. As I said, we didn't originally think of Patroni being extended to Google and then Kubernetes, but it just happened so naturally. This happened internally, but it was essentially all the Kubernetes and Google extension was born from another team, not from the team that originally developed Patroni. So we try to apply the same kind of way of working. So in the end, the team can submit a pull request to another project, to a project that is owned by another team, and the same happens for the web.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, we have the advantage of knowing. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So I was going to go back to you, Laurie. So go right ahead.
So we have the advantage of actually knowing a lot of the people that have contributed to Patroni. Either we knew them before, or we've reached out to them and been able to meet with them in person since. So we've been able to discuss our ideas with them, and they've also been able to give us their ideas back for how we could actually make Patroni more successful. The Helm chart was something that the folks at Dice came up with, and so like they had suggested it, and we realized, hey, they have a great idea. We really should do this, and so we actually got that worked on in a few weeks, and then Vic Iglesias from Google, accepted the PR, and so now he's got a little bit of knowledge about the project, and that's how the network tends to expand. A lot of us have pretty big networks in the tech communities that we work with. We've been doing this for a while, and so we just try to leverage some of that as well when we have a new project that seems promising, to reach out to them and ask them for feedback. And it helps them, apply their expertise, and also, helps us build software that maybe they can actually use to solve their own challenges.
Right. So now I did want to ask you a question, Laurie, because I think you studied law, I think, and
yeah.
I noticed.
I'm sorry, you've cut out.
That must be the connection all the way to Europe. Well, although then it would also cut you guys out too, but I guess not. Flat battery. Oh no, he's typed in that he's got a flat battery, which I presume means a dead battery. I actually, some of our conversation so far. So you're still. It seems to me you're still pretty early in the process then of choosing to open source these things. You're obviously basing your strategies though on things you've seen work for other companies. How easily has that been adapted to the projects that you're trying to open source internally here?
Can you be a little more specific on what you're asking for?
Let's see.
I'm not sure I understand. I just want to make
it's
sure.
It's still early
in
the morning for me.
It's okay.
So you're still pretty early, it seems. I mean, I think we would be having a much different conversation about Zalando and their contribution to open source in about 2 or 3 years. So I think you're on the right trajectory. Mm-hmm. But what are you seeing now? It seems to be fairly early in the cycle. What are you seeing now that is encouraging? What are you seeing that you didn't expect in terms of trying to shift the company from we build stuff so we can use it internally for proprietary to we build stuff that supports our mission, but also we want to build up a community around this to take advantage of what open source has to offer instead of proprietary software? What are you seeing now in terms of the pluses and minuses, the pitfalls and the wins?
Well, I see a lot more conversation about the work that we're releasing, just happening naturally among the developers. So like I said, early this year, we had about 330 repos on GitHub, and the quality of those varied greatly. Some of the things were not being maintained. Some of them were extremely specific to our needs. So the actual reason why they were on public GitHub wasn't clear. So from there, we already had guidelines that we drafted through the Open Source Guild. We had a list that covered basic things like have a README, here's our namespacing, how we would like you to do namespacing and versioning and naming your project. Here's what license we want you to use. So we had the basics in place, but a lot of the developers didn't know about these guidelines because they had been kept fairly tight with the guild. And so upon realizing how many of our team was how many members were actually involved in releasing stuff to GitHub, it was kind of like a door-to-door campaign to help people become aware of the guidelines and to start raising those questions with them, for them, about why. Why were they releasing this project? Who was their intended audience? Did they have a plan for maintaining it long term or short term? What was their plan? What was their vision? Did they do any research before releasing or even building the project? So from there, these questions became more and more part of our culture as an open source culture. And I think now the guidelines have gotten a lot of traffic on their own, and I think now awareness is greater than it was a year ago, and people are starting to ask those questions on their own. And they don't release things without READMEs anymore. So like, I'm the README person, because I'm like, you have to tell people how to install this. It's kind of important.
at least, and give them context too. And it's interesting that you're saying that there was also an internal, I'd have to say sales and training job to have the information proceed laterally. I'm also curious about the upward sales at the C level. was this ever a big issue about whether or not you could do this?
No, because we want to develop good software. That's the expectation. But when you're in a command and control kind of development environment, as we had been, work becomes much more. The relationship is, your boss kind of gives you the tasks to execute, and then you go and execute them. And innovation over time starts to waver, dissolve, because the developers have really no clear incentive or encouragement to experiment. And so the change with Radical Agility kind of created this renaissance effect where suddenly developers were able to experiment with different tools, build things. And so that had come from the top. You know, we wanted people to grow. I mean, mastery is one of those pillars from Daniel Pink that we've adopted. You know, so mastery involves creating software that's useful.
And it so that's... like an awesome- Yeah, sounds like an awesome place to work. So, because it sounds like you've already got that as part of your culture. One of the things I'm curious about, agile means different things to different people. But one of the things I'd be interested in, I think Simon was attempting to address this earlier, is that agile also means close knit, moving quickly. How do you coordinate that with having an external community for a particular project that might not be in on those discussions, in on, the kinds of directions you think you can get to, the kinds of commitments you're making in a sprint, for example? How do you incorporate that? Maybe some other people can get some tips from what might have already worked for you.
Sure. So I'm not personally applying Scrum to, or any agile methodology to open source development, because all of that work originates from autonomous teams that I'm not an official member of. So my involvement is, I do some project management in the sense that there may be repos that evolved from a team that are no longer being actively used or are of critical business value in this particular quarter to that team. And so what I will do is step in and help with documentation and making sure that pull requests get attention from the outside, even from the inside, just keeping things moving along so that project stewardship doesn't stop. So,
well, then,
I mean, I actually work with teams, but these teams don't actually have anything on GitHub that's public. So, and that's not a problem. it's when they have something to develop, then I guess they would get the additional help from having me being there to help with documentation. But I'm not part of like a specific open source team. We don't really have that. We just have teams that develop a lot of open source work.
Okay, so that also, that brings up a point there. You said that some of these projects might not be internally useful any longer. Does this mean you're open sourcing it because you're abandoning it?
No, what I'm saying is that so a project might emerge during a quarter when its need is extremely critical for business, the business to run. And then it may become more meaningful over time to a different team. So the project will live on but be shared with and then perhaps evolve to ownership on a different team. So the lifespan of the project might change. And then there might be a developer, maybe it's even not even used any longer in internal development, but it started with us and there are maintainers who want to make sure that the project stays alive. Or we've even seen projects kind of fall into, you know, disuse a bit, but then come back because suddenly we have a need to use something like it. And so then it has a new life.
Okay, let's talk about, we've talked about the thing that starts with a P, which I know I don't have in front of me, Petroni or whatever.
Petroni, yeah.
Okay, Petroni, good. I'm 55 today and I still remember occasional words. That is very, very useful. That will be something of use to me for the rest of my life.
I forgot my water, so that's why I'm like, because I'm apparently, my brain is suffering from...
If I didn't have a routine to go through for every single Floss Weekly, I would be completely lost. So the direction. So now I've forgotten the question. So, oh yeah. So besides Petroni, tell us some of the other things that you'd like to have our audience be interested in that exist. Do your external sales pitch. What else can we see in this repo? And what are you most excited about in addition to Petroni?
So Raphael hasn't spoken for a while.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess. I have a couple of things, of course. I think Conexión is definitely, it's probably the project we have with the highest number of stars.
It is.
So, and it also has a pretty good community. You can just go to Stack Overflow and find people asking, how do I do this with Conexión? So it is already somehow as his own audience. So Conexión is a worker or OpenAPI, as it was renamed, first framework for the Python language allows for automatic endpoint validation, OAuth, and on top of the Flask framework. We've been using quite a lot internally, and it's been great. And another one I would love to mention is Skipper. So I'm a big Golang fan, and Skipper is an HTTP router. It was written in Go that can act as a essentially reverse proxy and as a syntax definition for routes that we also defined. And essentially is really something really great. So it's the core of everything we do. Every request to our shop goes through Skipper. So you can imagine that this is really something that scales. I would definitely love to. So there are a lot of other competitors, for example, for Skippers out there, and some of them have more popularity than Skipper, and it's definitely our job to promote it better. So if you guys are listening to this, just go check it out. I think it's really great.
Well, that brings up another point. You've got these wonderful projects that you're building internally. How many of these are essentially competitors to things that are out there, and it couldn't have been done with just simply taking an existing open source project and adding some of your own customization to apply it to your particular environment? I mean, what's innovative in this list of 137 projects that you probably say all of them, I know, but
I wouldn't make a statement like that. I mean, one of the ideas in the shift of like how we did open source, where we were releasing a lot of things, to where we're more selective, is that we ask those questions about how innovative something is before we put it out there. So that's in our guidelines. You know, the idea is that our developers will go on Google and look up if their idea has been done by someone else. And if so, then the hope is that they will either reach out themselves, or they can ask someone like me for help to connect them to the creators of that project, and then maybe just contribute to what's already out there. We have at times forked existing projects because they didn't meet our needs. This is something that I ask people to articulate in their readmes, because as a developer who is trying to find a solution to a problem, you know, you're going to want to know, well, why should I use this instead of that thing that I've already heard of? So in the readme, we, you know, ask people to make it clear, you know, why is this different and how? And if it was inspired by an existing project, then give a nod to it. Explain why your work is different. So we have of these, some things are more innovative than others. But from this batch that you see now, there's definitely more of a, you know, that is one of the ideas why you are seeing it, because that's what we want to highlight for others.
Okay. So you are actually answering that question as part of your open source filtering. Just a weird question. Do you recall offhand anything that didn't make the cut and why?
Oh, sure. Like some of the small, like there was a collection of very small React components that had very similar, you know, they had already been done before, and those existing components were widely adopted. And so asking, you know, well, what's special about these? And another developer also kind of asking that the creator of these components, well, what's so unique about these? And then we realized that they weren't, so then we didn't really invest further in them as like an open source project where we would promote and tweet about and all that stuff.
Interesting question for you. And hello, I'm back. My computer.
Yeah, I see. Really?
So I'm interested to know, there's an awful lot of code that you've developed internally and released. Do you contribute upstream to other people's projects very much?
Yes. So this is something that I'm trying to. We have developers. We have, you know, 50 or 60 coming to join us every month, and a lot of them have been contributing to external projects. So one of the questions I ask them is, you know, what have you contributed to? And so we have some on the Aurelia framework. We are talking to the folks at ESLint and Webpack to contribute mindfully, I want to say, like, which means like they have lots of open issues and rules, proposed rules for the project, and we'd like to do something as our front-end community instead of just sending lots of different bug fixes and being a little bit random about it. But we have a front-ender kind of spearheading that discussion with them. So also one other front-end project that I'm not remembering right now. I think that was it. We've contributed to... so we have... some folks that contribute to specific languages. So it's really quite, you know, dependent upon individual initiative. And one of the things I'm working on now is that we get more proactive about making those contributions. We've contributed to Spark, some small tooling that we use. So it's very here and there, but yes.
Right.
I would add we have also people that contributed to the upstream Postgres itself. And we have already like some commits to Kubernetes for small patches. So we always try to encourage first, like have a look what exists, and we really try to encourage and help people make the contribution upstream to project when this is needed before reinventing the wheel or starting with whatever new.
Right. So I see you're using that you're that you use Grimoire to do your project dashboard.
Created our own.
Oh, you made your own.
Built our own. It was an onboarding project. We know those guys, and we've talked about combining, joining forces with them. But the project originated as an onboarding project last summer, and so then it evolved into something that we actually just improved and continue to use.
Right. Okay, so now let me ask you the question I was going to ask before I went dark. I see you're a law graduate, I think, and I see that all of your projects are using the MIT license pretty religiously for outbound licensing. Can you talk us through the reason why you're doing that, why you're using MIT and not a license, for example, that gives a patent grant?
Simply that it's really, you know, a lot of our favorite other open source developers are using the license, and also creates, you know, the maximum freedom. So it's least restrictive for our purposes.
So does it concern you at all that you're not giving a software patent license? I know you live in a country that is reputed not to have software patents, but there's a lot of other people who don't. If they were going to use a maximally permissive license, would probably want to use the Apache license, or would follow Facebook's example and give a patent grant along with the license. Could you talk us through why you don't think that's important?
I mean, it's really not that complicated. Like, our VP of engineering really favored the MIT license. We shared our idea with the legal department, and that was that. I mean,
right.
There's really not much more to it.
So, are you a member of OIN, just out of interest?
Not personally, no.
No, I mean, you're not an organizational member of OIN?
Not currently.
Okay. So, overall, you know, you've got this big swathe of projects that have come from your own development. I also see that you're interested in InnerSource, which was a big topic that came up at the last couple of OSCONs. For listeners and viewers who aren't familiar with that, the idea of InnerSource is to use open source principles and methodology inside a company, so without the ethical imperative, but rather using it as a methodology to improve internal development. So how is that going for you, using InnerSource in your organization? Is that making a difference to you?
Yeah, I mean, with so many teams, like we rolled it out as a pilot last quarter. A former PayPal, I'm not sure what his job title was there, but he's a delivery lead here, which means he is like the technical lead for several teams. And so he had firsthand experience with InnerSource. I had it sort of informally in my last company. And so we realized that our teams they were being sort of blocked by each other sometimes because of waiting for fixes. So we invited teams that wanted to try out InnerSource to do so, and they did. And so we are seeing among those teams, and that number has grown over the few months since the pilot. So we're constantly hearing news stories about teams trying out InnerSource, and then they report back to us that it helped them solve a problem. And so, like, we're seeing some interesting collaborations between, like, our platform and infra teams and brand solutions, which is, helping the brands that we work with develop services. So it's very, you know, interesting to see how these teams are relating to each other and helping each other get work done. And it does a lot for, fostering goodwill among different teams, because we all can become very much focused on what's in front of us in terms of our work. And so with InnerSource, teams are given a reason and a vehicle to move, to talk to other teams, find out what those teams are working on, what challenges they're facing, and solve problems together. So that's been really nice to watch. We had been doing inner source in the past, but some teams hadn't for various reasons. So we wanted to try to help some of those teams use this model to reduce their waiting time, basically.
So some of the folks at PayPal tell me that they believe that inner source leads to a greater understanding of open source, better contribution, more effectiveness. Would you agree with that? And have you got any stories to tell about it?
Yeah, I would. So like one team here has been developing, like Raphael mentioned, the Skipper. So that's a component for our front-end microservices architecture, and it works together with a few other projects. The ones that are publicly released are Innkeeper and Taylor. Taylor is a streaming layout service, and Innkeeper is the API other half. It works with Skipper. And so those projects are all embedded in our fashion store, which is the website, and what you see is a customer. And so that team has become quite champion-like of this inner source idea, because a lot of the work that they have done and are doing now really involves and affects several teams. And so they're drawing upon the interests of those teams to really get their development done a lot faster. So like they now have three or four teams in their department, the fashion store, like I mentioned, they build the customer-facing website, and they're also working with different components like search and personalization, which you would, you know, they produce work that enhances our customer experience. So that's been interesting because they're starting to like become leaders. They see even more so, but like inner source leaders seeing opportunities for other teams to collaborate and then going to those teams and saying, hey, you could either collaborate or, you know, just watch our repo. And if there's something that you need, why don't you go ahead and build it and then make a pull request and we'll look at it. And there you go. So one of my favorite success stories. And their delivery leads are quite behind it too. So it empowers the delivery leads to solve their team's problems by, you know, their team doesn't have to do all the work anymore. They can work with the, you know, another team or set of teams.
So would you say that it's inner source, Agile and Scrum, or open source that is making the biggest difference to Zalando?
So I'm not really the mention of Scrum is a little bit jarring for me because Scrum is just a method, one of several that we employ. So we don't really tell teams you have to do Scrum, you have to do this, you don't have to do that. That's really a decision for the teams. So I can't even really, and a lot of them, you know, combine several different agile methodologies together. So I can't really say that Scrum, I wouldn't be able to quantify that because it's probably hybridized.
Agile.
Yeah, so agile. Agile for sure. And then the open source. Oh, wait, can you rephrase the question? Because I wouldn't answer it correctly.
So the key question is: you're doing inner source. You're fanatically open sourcing components on GitHub. You are.
Now we are restrained in releasing things to GitHub. We were fanatic before. We've matured.
And your website advertises radical agility. So is it radical agility, open source, or inner source that is making the biggest contribution to Zalando's success?
Well, I mean, I would have to say in terms of impacts, radical agility once again was a reorganization of the tech team to suddenly go from being functional command and control teams to being autonomous teams that are given purpose and mastery to develop software that works and that enhances the customer experience. So by far that affects every team and every product owner and every product specialist because they're included as well. It affects the producers who are like the engines that keep the teams running and get the work done. So that by far obviously has the greatest impact. And that would be, that's the structure by which we all work, or in which we all work. It's the environment. After that, I mean, open source is one part of our growth and success because it's such a key component of our development. We rely on it to exist, and we also give back to the communities so that we get things done and involve others, just like any company doing open source. And then I would say inner source helps us a lot, but because the concept in itself is still quite new, just that word and the way that people, they may be inner sourcing, but you know, the term inner source is not something they've been using for years, but they've just been doing it. So that would be probably third, but it helps drive, I wouldn't say open source development because it can, but it's not necessarily the explicit objective. But it definitely drives autonomy, purpose, and mastery, because your purpose is to get software developed that works. And then mastery, you know, how you can get that done, if it's using the resources around you to get that work done better, more effectively, then there you go. And then the autonomy, if your team can manage its own decisions and development, including some of the hardest ones, which involve like working with other teams and working with other departments, then, you know, then you're set. But obviously radical agility by far would be the number one.
So, you know, looking at everything that you're doing here, it looks like your open source is really the expression of your internal process. It doesn't look like you're really embracing community or creating software freedom. It looks like your open source activity is really the expression of your very radical, agile internal process. It's kind of an outpouring of it rather than something where you're engaging in it for the general good of humanity. Do you think that it would be fair to characterize what you're doing in that way, that your open source activity is the outflowing of your agile method rather than trying to create software freedom?
No, I wouldn't say that at all, because, I mean, so we're a business, right? We have to serve our own needs. But as part of that, we develop software that we invite others to use, and we are actively making contributions more and more to other people's software. Some of us are, we don't really, we do it because of this idea that it's free and open. And we just have a community platform that enables us to express those values. So yes, we have to serve our business interests, but that can be a very loosely worn robe.
So what you don't see in the dashboard are probably like our upstream contributions, and this I would definitely categorize as improving like the community or everybody. The fact that so we have already several, as I said, several projects that are actively used and have communities around them, but the fact that we don't have like Kubernetes, for example, doesn't mean that it's not necessarily a bad thing, I would say. So I think it's far more being good citizen of the open source world to say we contribute to Kubernetes than we fork it or we build our own solution for that. I mean, this is it's very mature approach. And if you look at, again, I bring this project because I'm very close to it. You can see that, like, for example, the number of contributions coming from Google are decreasing, right? So because other companies are contributing, and it's now a project of the Cloud Native Computing Foundation. So we want to be good citizens of this world. And we definitely want to bring our projects up in the GitHub ranking. So create good communities around them. But we definitely also consider like just being good citizens, you know?
Cool. You know, we're almost out of time. In fact, we're probably even slightly over, but we'll go ahead and let me ask one final question, one major final question, which is that for each of you, is there anything we haven't covered in the 52 minutes of the interview so far that you think we should have covered and you want our audience to know? So, Lori, we'll start with you.
Sure. I mean, we invite people to use our work, get involved. I mean, you can just use it. And if it works for you, some note would be great telling us that you're using it so that it makes us, you know, it makes the creators really of these projects especially know or feel good, because then they know that their work is making a difference for others as well as ourselves. So if you find something on our dashboard that looks interesting, like drop us a line and we'll go from there.
Cool. Raffaele, same question?
Yeah, I would just, you know, I totally agree with Lori. We're very excited to have the possibility to actually do open source, and we want to do a great job. And yeah, we want to work with the communities on our projects to make it possible to be better. And we already engaged with so many people out there. So if you just want to reach us, just do it.
And if you have something that you're working on, you know, tell us that too. Because we also promote other companies and other individuals' projects. This is just something like part of the work is knowledge sharing. And so if we find something that's really interesting, you know, we promote that too. It's not exclusively us.
Because we might end up
using it.
And two final questions, which I have to ask or my audience yells at me, sadly.
okay.
So favorite scripting language and primary text editor. Lori first.
So, I mean, I guess people always ask this question. So I guess the favorite scripting language would be Python because it's so flexible and everywhere. And then favorite text editor. I mean, they all have their merits. Like Atom's fine. Sublime Text. I've used them both.
I think you might have broken Randall's heart.
No, it's okay. I hear this pretty much every week. I'm pretty much calloused on that already. And Raffaele, same question. Is there a redeeming part of this answer? Is there, Raffaele, save me.
So I don't have a favorite scripting language. I just try to use Go for whatever I do, which is not a scripting language. So
yeah,
you get that. And editor, VI.
See, again, you know, I can recall back many years ago, there was somebody that answered Perl and Emacs, and I was just so excited and happy to have a like-minded person on the show. But you know, you guys... Sorry, Simon, what were you saying?
That must have been a long time ago, Randall.
It was a long time ago, back when I was 54, 53, maybe back in there. Hey, guys, you know, it's been really great having you on the show, talking about what Zalando is doing in terms of open source and talking about some of the machinery that has to go on behind the scenes to have things be open source within within a company and also to be able to create community around it. So thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having us. It was pretty fun.
Awesome. That was Lori Apple and Raffaele DeFazio. What do you think, Simon?
That's a fine array of components that they have there. But, you know, my overall take would be that they're doing Agile. The best way to make Agile work really well is to make everybody believe they're being watched. And open source makes all of those agile developers believe they're being watched. And there's then a side benefit that some other people are benefiting from the code in quite a few of the cases. I do wonder whether they would get more benefit by focusing in on a couple of projects. It seems to me that they want to become known as an open source contributor. And I wonder whether they would be better off focusing on a small group of those projects and becoming famous for doing them and develop a community around them. But, you know, it's great to see people using open source software and making lots of code available. I believe there's more software freedom in the world the more code that's under open source licenses. And so, I would very much give them credit for making that true.
And I absolutely agree. There's definitely a lot of a value here in terms of, you know, they've solved some problems in a unique way, being able to share that in a way that still provides value to their business internally. That's a fine line to walk. You know, we've seen plenty of examples of that in Floss Weekly over the 10 years that the show's happened, that you can be either just a tiny bit open source, you know, start dipping your toe into the pool, or you can be like the entire project is open source and the only thing we sell is the value addeds, like training and a platform or whatever. And I'm happy that it's all happening. You know, I think this is a big thing. While you were gone, one of the things I asked was about the C-level people, how easy was it to sell to them? And the answer was they were in it. They were committed already. And I know that wouldn't have been the conversation 10 years ago. So we've actually made some progress now with people who are in charge, really recognizing the value, you know, not being afraid of open source. You know, because initially it was afraid of even using open source, and then it was sort of fear of contributing out publicly. Simon, how would you characterize the shift in the last 10 to 15 years? Am I characterizing this properly?
No, I think that's spot on. I think that we've seen open source move from being a poorly understood, radical edge philosophy to being something which is now driving the innovation in the computer industry, to the point where there are organizations that want to co-opt it and make it their own and take the software freedom out of it. You know, I think that one of the biggest things that we have to do right now in the world of open source and free software is remind people that the reason that they get control of their IT architecture and they get a flexibility in the suppliers they use, and that because of those things they're able to save money, all those things flow from having software freedom in the first place. And I think that open source has become so successful that people have forgotten that it's liberty that lies behind it. And so you know, I would agree with what you're saying there. I think that open source has become quite dominant now. And we're beginning to see organizations using open source within their methodology and maybe needing to learn that all that value that they're getting is coming from the four freedoms and the idea of software freedom.
Yeah, you know, it sounds like the kind of thing we can do on a show if we ever don't have an actual guest. That sounds like a lot of fun to just talk about that. Obviously, you're very versed in that. I'm more versed in it as having interviewed thousands of people here. Well, not thousands, hundreds. Not thousands yet. Maybe someday. But speaking of interviewing thousands of people, we're running over, so I need to get moving on. gRPC is next week. That's Google's Remote Procedure Call Interface, high availability, discovery, things like that, wire protocols for objects and things like that. Minoka, after that, the general purpose OS from scratch, POSIX compatible, running already on the x86 and ARM, which is really cool. Koala, spelled with a C, not a K. Linting and fixing code for all languages. Ooh. Twine, we covered interactive fiction a while back. This is a open source tool to actually build your own interactive fiction and deploy it on your website and even use their hosted service to host an interactive fiction story. Just added to the schedule, OpenHMD. HMD there, standing not for anything medical, like high availability doctors. No, it's head-mounted displays. So there's a lot of those coming out now. Google Glass, I think, is probably the one most of us are familiar with, but we also have Oculus and things like that. So these guys are open sourcing some various technologies around all that. That should be pretty fun. OpenNMS after that, that's carrier-grade network monitoring. And just added to the schedule as well, Eclipse Shay, which is a developer workspace server and cloud IDE. So we have one of the lead project leads on that, who also happens to be working at CodeEnvy, which is a commercial sourced commercial platform for that. So we'll be talking about both of those, mostly about Eclipse Shay, of course. And we've got a bunch of people on the short list. If you go to twit.tv/floss, you can see our homepage for our show. Linked from there is, in fact, our big spreadsheet, which you can see my work in progress, my out in the open. to talk about that. Still booking a couple more dates in Q4. I think just way down at the end of December, but we've opened up Q1 and I'm going to start booking those. I have been booking a few of those. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays at live.twit.tv. So we had a couple of questions. Well, maybe not. We had some questions. We had a number of questions. That's how I can say this, where the number might be zero from the chat room. Yes, you can follow us on Floss Weekly on Google+ and at Floss Weekly. That gets tweeted over to automatically on Twitter. You can follow me at Google+, Randall L. Schwartz. You can also, gets tweeted over to Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, and also over to Facebook when the mechanism works. Sorry, it was broken for 4 or 5 days. I have nothing to plug, which is sort of a little weird. I'll probably be at the just now announced Pearl Conference in Alexandria, Virginia, coming up next summer. Almost certainly be at OSCON in Austin again, in various capacities, probably as the Floss Weekly coordinator and a head honcho, a showrunner, whatever it is my title is these days. Anything you want to plug, Simon?
Well, it's getting to the end of the year now. So the next, just looking at my calendar here, the next appointment that I've got is actually FOSDEM, which is the Free and Open Source Developers European Meeting, one of the world's biggest open source and free software events, held in Brussels the weekend of the 4th and 5th of February next year. If you live in Europe and you're interested in free software and open source, you really owe it to yourself to go to that conference at some point. It's completely free to attend. It kind of happens organically out on the outskirts of Brussels, and it is quite a phenomenon of a kind that you're not going to experience at any other venue. After that, I've no idea what's happened. Depends on which of the paper submissions I've made get accepted and where. I am now writing independently of any employer or publication, occasionally getting stories in InfoWorld. If you visit my website at webmink.com, you'll discover that I'm now seeking patrons on Patreon. So if you like the stuff that I'm writing or tweeting about, do please sponsor me on Patreon. And that will help me to stay as well-fed as possible while I'm doing those things, and maybe even allow for the odd bottle of wine occasionally. Back to you, Randall.
Thank you. And Simon, I wasn't kidding earlier. We really need to do a show on open source philosophy, on the shifts that have happened over the last 10, 15, 20 years since open source term was invented.
Yeah.
And things like that. So at some point, when we don't have a guest scheduled, we should probably actually you and me and I don't know, maybe we'll get Aaron or somebody else in as well and do a roundtable chat, because I think there's a lot of things that get stated sort of between the cracks when we're doing interviews, but not as much as just really being head on the show. So
well, one of the things I put on the schedule while you were away was I've started a not-for-profit organization called Public Software, which acts as an umbrella for open source projects. And a lot of the sort of things that you're talking about there are part of our philosophy and our modus operandi. So maybe you could put that on the schedule and we could talk about them within the context of a discussion about public software.
Well, I do have 2 dates still open in December. So if you want to figure out if one of those works for you, let me know. And we will do that.
Okay, sounds good.
And Simon, thank you once again for jumping in. It's always nice to have the actual Simon instead of me having to channel Simon. So I'm glad you were here once again. Thank you for stepping into the last minute. And that was a wonderful shared interview.
I just hope the guests think it was that good.
Well, clearly they've gotten the benefit of thousands and thousands of more eyeballs, if nothing else. Anyway, so we're over. We got to go. We'll see you again. Happy birthday to me one more time. And we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.